We're on Shmuel Aleph. We're starting Perek Hey. We're going to be finishing Perek Hey. Yeah. Wow, we're going to finish the Perek in one sitting? That's pretty impressive. Well, it's a very short Perek. Okay, so Perek Dalid, we discussed how the Bnei Israel lost a war. Not only did they lose the war against the Plishtim, they brought the Aron, they lost the Aron. They lost Hophni and Pinchas, they died. They lost Eli, who died upon hearing the tragedy of the Aron being taken. And not only that, but Pinchas' wife, who was pregnant at the time, also died. But fortunately, she was able to have a child immediately before dying, and she named the child a Kavod, or in English, Ichabod. We're now continuing with Perek Hey. So now that the Plishtim have the Aron, the Plishtim are going to realize that that was a terrible mistake. They should never have taken it. And ultimately, in the end of this parak, really the next parak, we'll see how they just end up giving it back to the Jewish people because of the tremendous problems that they encounter. So let's begin Pasuk Aleph. The Plishtim lokhu, so the Plishtim took as Aron Belokim, the Uhu mi Evan Ezer Ashdod. So they took it, they brought it from Evan Ezer to this place called Ashdod. Which if we look on our map, which is in our packet, which may not be to scale, but nonetheless it's toward one of the last pages before you see all the wonderful pictures.
It's north of Ashkelon.
It is.
It's west city.
It's on the top west. Of this map.
Everything is relative.
It's west of Ashkelon. It's one of the five Philistine cities.
Does everyone see where Ashdod is on the map?
Yeah.
So it's
east of New York.
Down here, right? All right. So they fought all the way up north. They brought it all the way down. So they carried it quite a distance with them. So let's continue with Pasuk Bet. Pasuk Bet continues and says, "Vayichu plishtim es Aron ve'elokim." Again, it just says again that they took this Aron. Yaviuhu also base Dagon. They decided to place it in this place called Beis Dagon. We'll see what that is in a second. V'yasigu also Eitzel Dagon. Rashi as well as the Sudasian translates V'yasigu as Hamido, that they established it, they placed it next to Dagon. What is Dagon? What's a pizza shop in Mill Basin? But the Sudasian translates it. No, I know. So the Sudasian says Dagon is Shem Avodos Kacham. It's a type of idol. And that was the name of this idol called Dagon. And we're going to see eventually when we see, well, let's look, he says Rashi hints to it, but the Radak and Pasuk Dal we'll get to later is going to really say it much clearer. Rashi and Pasuk Bet says Eitzel Dagon, Demus Osui Kedemus Dagon. And you'll see in the back, you'll see some wonderful pictures of what some people think is the appearance of this particular Avodah Zarah. That it looked like a fish, and some of the explanations, a beautiful explanation as to why it represents the fish, is in English in our packet on page 37, because the Plishtim lived along the Mediterranean coast, and presumably were heavily involved in fishing. And therefore it makes sense that their Avodah Zarah was connected somehow to a fish, that they wanted to pray to this god, the lowercase g. That Radak is going to talk about a mermaid. Yes.
Mermaid.
Yes. So the Radak, we're going to get to that in Pasuk Dalet. But at least we see at this point this idea of how they worship the fish. And interestingly enough, that they decided to put the Aron specifically located right next to it. And the Mefarshim explain, actually a Yalkut Shimoni that says the reason why they did this is, quote, Amru, they said, Zen Notzach v'Zen Notzach, this God is able to conquer, and your God, which they consider like the Aron, like some type of a molten image, is also something which can conquer. Yavu Notzach v'Yavu Notzach. Let's see which one won. Now, basically, they were rubbing it in. That's how the Mefarshim explained that they placed it right next to their Avodah Zarah, as if to say, see, you had your Avodah Zarah, which is maybe how they looked at the Aron, and we have ours, and we won. So therefore we see that our God is stronger, better, mightier than your God.
That's, you would think that if they have an industry is fishing,
yes,
and they have the Dagon, that this is some sort of a something related to financial success, Parnassa, or something
right.
like that.
Yeah, right. Which makes sense. That that's we find that all the time. You know, they pray to have different gods for the for them for their benefit. And it's interesting. We're going to see the change in the psukim. Here it says Aron Elokim. And we're going to see sometimes it's Aron Hashem. But when they looked at the Aron, they always looked at it as Aron Elokim. And we know the difference between Elokim and Hashem is Midas HaRachmim as versus Midas HaDin, a more strict, exact way of looking at it. And as we're entering Pesach shortly, it's interesting that this is actually how some people viewed how Paro looked at the Makos and everything. That when he was asked for the Bnei Yisrael to leave Mitzrayim, his response was, Mi Hashem ki eshma b'kolo. Paro didn't deny that there was a God, but he always looked at this God, similar to the Plishtim, as Elohim, someone who was Midas Hadin, someone who was exact in punishment. But he was never able to see any reason to wish to connect to him. So if you can compare it to Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem, they're only able to gravitate toward the fear. But once that's no longer in front of you, like the Makos ended, so they're no longer to be afraid. Like a child is afraid of their teacher when they're in front. As soon as the teacher leaves, I can care less. It's because that's not the true level. That's not the highest Madrega. And that's how some people explain. Paro was unable to reach the level of Mi Hashem. He wasn't able to tap in to understand the reason to have Dveikus, to attach oneself to the Midas HaChesed, to Hashem's aspect. And he says, Abba B'Shem Hashem lo ha'yirotza la'hakiro. He was not able to recognize. And that's why also, but later on, when we study, when it came to the Makos, when he wanted it to leave, he said, Hashem HaTzadik v'aniva ami harashayim. He eventually noticed that element of Hashem. And then ultimately he says, L'chu ibdu es Hashem elokeichem. But that's how some of the Farshim compared over here, that they were only able to see the and have Yiras Shamayim. However, when it came to things which were Avas Hashem, that they weren't able to see. And this is what maybe Aron Elokim means as well. All right, let's move on. Pasuk Gimel. Pasuk Gimel, V'yashkimu Ashdodim Mimacharas. So those who lived in this place, Ashdod, they got up in the morning and, you know, they were obviously extremely happy. Here they had this beautiful Aron in their house of Avodah Zarah, and they wanted to probably go and to worship in their temple. V'hine Dagon nofel afan of Artsa. But something strange happened. Their idol had fallen to the ground. Lifnei Aron Hashem, in front of the Aron. Here it changes.
Nofel means is fallen. It's not past tense. It's present. Am I right?
No fail. It's in the process of falling.
No fail is falling.
Right.
If it had fallen,
no,
no follow. It was not
following. Right. So I guess it could be alluding to no fail does not necessarily mean.
I'm questioning it.
No, it's a good point.
I don't have an answer.
Because we're going to see that no fail lafanav could means not just that just it fell down. But and it fell, but it's still falling down. Notice it's on the ground, but the idea is it's subservient to the Aron.
Maybe
it's,
when they came in, they actually saw the idol falling.
Or it could be that the actual falling is one thing, but then once it's lying down in a prone position in front of the Aron Hashem, then it's prostrating itself. So it's an ongoing thing.
It's losing its superiority.
It's losing its dignity.
Yeah, that's probably how some of the Mefarshim interpret that. We'll see that when we see the Mefarshim. But this is what they saw. Vayichu as Dagon v'yashivu osolim komo. So what did they do? They took their idol and they put it back. Why did they do that? Weren't they in awe of the fact that this Avodah Zarah is bowing down to this idol, to this Aron, and now they realize that the Aron is something which they should superior. Mesudas David says.
Maybe they thought there was an earthquake.
Exactly. That's what Mesudas David basically says. What does it say? So it says that they took it back. They put it back. Ki choshvu shiva mikra nafal.
It happened.
Right, it was just by chance, right? An earthquake, whatever. It fell down, you know? It happens. Sometimes these things happen. And that's all it was. And therefore, they were unable to obviously see the sign. They weren't able to see. Which is, that itself is strange.
Right.
And that, but what you were saying is also kind of like with the Radak, only the first few words. Nafal afanav kimo alpanav. It's lafana means it fell on its face. And the fact that it fell on its face, what do you mean it fell on its face? It means that it shouldn't have fallen necessarily in such a peculiar way, but it was as though it's prostrating itself down to the Aron to show that the Aron was superior to it. But of course, even though Hashem gave them the opportunity to see this sign, they weren't able to see. They were too blind to be able to see this sign. So Pasuk Dalet. So, alright. They went about their day, went to bed, and the next day, Pasuk Dalet, Vashkimu Babokim Imcharas. The next day comes, they wake up, and what happens? Not only was the this idol, this Dagon, lying on the ground, but worse, Vihini Dagon Nofel Afanav. Yes, Vihini Dagon Nofel Afanav. It had fallen, right? Which is the same lashon, Arza, to the ground. Lifnei Aron Hashem. So that's all the same, but right here's the difference. Varosh Dagon Ushte Kapos Yadav Krusos El Ha Mifton. So in this situation, now you have the head as well as the two palms of the hands that were cut and severed. And now they're lying on the threshold. Rak Dagon Nishar Alav. Only the Dagon part was remaining. And that's, now we can go to the Radak. The Radak explains the mermaid theory over here, which is the...
it's all pretty fishy.
The third, yeah. The third wide line, going in the middle of this Radak. Omru, which is the last word on the line, Ki Dagon Matvuro Lomata, from the navel and down, Hayesurus Dag, had the appearance of a fish. Lafikach Nikra Dagon. And therefore it was called fish. However, Matvuro Lomala, from the navel up, Surus Adam. Kamosh Amar Ushte Kapos Dadav, which talks about human hands, Karusos El Hamifton, that they were cut off to the threshold. V'zeh pirusho rak dagon nishar lav. That's what it means. That this only right, only the source dog nishar lav, only that part. And therefore, so that really sounds literally like the mermaid theory, that from waist down was fish, and from waist up is head. And if we would bismanenu want to compare it to anything, and maybe compare it to the Sphinx. Now you have the Sphinx, in which is a human head, and then the rest of it is the body of a lion, which represents, of course, that you have the intellect of the human being, even though we may not be physically as strong as animals, but we have the intellect so we can defeat them, shoot them, do whatever. But the ultimate is having the intellect of a human being and a body of a lion. That's the idea of a Sphinx. And maybe over here, that's the same thing when it came to the Dagon. The ultimate level is not just being a fish, conquering the seas, but also having the intellect to be able to conquer the world, the earth, as well as to be able to rule over all living creatures. And that was the symbolism of it. So they cut everything.
But Dagon also had hands.
He also had hands.
He had arms hands from the body up.
In other words, it wasn't fish from that point. No, if they compared to the Sphinx, the whole body is
right.
The lion's paws,
right.
It's all part of the same animal, it's just the head, right.
Right. Right.
They still believed that they could, that they had a human strength that the god was able to do also, probably, because he had these hands.
Right, right. But that's literally what a mermaid looks like. A mermaid has hands, so it's interesting. The origin is from the Avodah Zarah.
I would think that it's interesting to know here that the term that's used is that krutot. It's like they're cut off. It's not. It would be something that would be the normal thing if the thing happened to fall because it was poorly situated or something like that. They'd break off. But it doesn't say broken off. It's like they're cut off.
Cut off sounds like it's almost like it's human characteristics.
Right.
as opposed to it shattered, it broke.
I mean, it shows intent. You know, it's not an accident. They would just break off. So one half would break off. The whole thing would break off. Here it's like somebody came and cut it off.
Right. Yeah, that's I hear that. And obviously,
either that or it was designed that it would fall to hands.
Why would they want to do that?
This was before the age of planned obsolescence.
So obviously, again, the Hashem tried to give them this some type of a hint the first time, and they weren't able to see it. And therefore, not only for it falling down, they would probably just have picked it up again. So therefore, he had to do this dramatic thing by having the whole thing just break in half.
Okay.
Al kain lo yid. So therefore, you would think they did tshuva, Yerushimayim.
Just the Yiddish translation for Crusoe's.
Yes.
It's cut.
It's
literally it's cut. That it wasn't broken. That it was cut.
Exactly. That's what that word means.
Right. Very good. Okay, so Pasuk Hey says, Al-Kain, therefore, it's interesting, in the English, they just put this in parentheses, this whole Pasuk, because it's really almost like a sidebar. Lo yidrachu kohani dagon v'chol haboyim beis dagon al-miftan dagon bi'ashtod ad yom hazeh. That's the reason why these people, the priests of Dagon, anyone who went into this base of Odeh Zarah, they never would tread upon this threshold of Dagon ad hayom hazeh until this very day. And therefore,
only in Ashdod.
Why? Because they felt that the Kedusha, so to speak, of this Avodah Zarah transferred to the threshold of where it shattered. That's what they thought. That was their interpretation of this whole matter. Now,
it never penetrated. Them, this was still a holy thing.
Right.
The fact that Dagon fell on it elevated the threshold.
Right. That's right.
To a higher madriga.
That's right. They were unable to see.
Unable to see that it was because of the Aron Hashem.
Right. So, just as for halachically speaking, when it comes to Avodah Zarah, Avodah Zarah is also Bahana. Now, if you have the goy that who is worshiping it, is they're mavatal it, they nullify it, saying it's worthless, then the halach is it's mutar bahana. This is actually derived, we'll see this later on in Shmuel Bet, by Iti Hagiti, which came all the way, and talks about the plishtim, that David burned some of their avodah zarah, and he actually kept some of it. And the reason why is because when Iti Hagiti nullified it, now he was allowed to use it, because it was no longer avodah zarah. Now, the Mefarshim asked the question, actually, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, that said, asked the question, Avodas Kochavim Shinishbara Mi'aleha. What happens if the Avodah Zarah breaks by itself? It shatters into pieces. Now, it wasn't being, weren't Mavatalit, but nonetheless, it was this wonderful, beautiful, magnificent statue. Now it's shattered into a million pieces. So there's actually a machlok, this one can imagine, whether or not those fragments, if you can use those pieces or not. According to Rav Yochanan, he says it's osur because no one was mevatel. According to Reish Lakish, he says it's mestama that they were mevatel. Why? Because a person who worshipped it would say the fact that this beautiful statue couldn't even save itself, so it's not going to save me. So by virtue of looking at an avodah zarah which has been shattered, that in itself should be the bittel. And on this, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah asked the question from our story. What's the question that he asked? He says, well, it doesn't make sense. You're telling me that as soon as you see it shattered, people are going to all of a sudden be mavatal and say it's worthless. But what did the people in Ashdod do? They started worshiping the threshold. So obviously that's not true. So his answer to this question is, that's not a raya. He says, Mishum raya. Over there, they no longer worshipped this Avodah Zarah. They no longer worshipped the fragment and pieces. They worshipped the threshold. And therefore, goofy, you can learn out from this story, a proof that once it shatters, the people are no longer going to consider that piece chashuv. Maybe they'll consider something else chashuv, which they shouldn't. But certainly they're no longer consider those pieces chashuv. And therefore, from that point on, the Gemara feels it's mutar bahana. That's an interesting halacha to share, which is derived from this pasuk. Pasuk Vav. Okay. So, now they have the Aron. They no longer have this Avodah Zarah. It's probably, this is a connection. We're now going to see the most unusual punishment I've ever heard of. And it's hard to even translate the words. And that's perhaps one of the reasons why the Kri and the Ksiv are going to be different in this Pasuk. Because the punishment, the pain that they went through was so bizarre that it's not even, can't even say the word. So what happened? V'tichbad Yad Hashem El Ha'ashdod. So Hashem placed his hand against these people from Ashdod in a very heavy way. V'yashimein, and he devastated them. V'yach osam, and here you have a difference between the Kri and the Ksiv, Bachorim es Ashdod es Gvuleha. The people from Ashdod, as well as the borders, those people were afflicted, as it's translated in the English, with hemorrhoids. That's what it says. That's how they translate.
We have this in the Tochacha.
Yeah, and in fact, in the Tochacha, it's the same thing. The Kri and the Ksiv, it's exactly the same thing. And the question is, so why is it? There's no coincidence. So some of the Farshim explain like this. The way it's written, Afolim refers to the location in the body where it is affected, where the affliction occurs. And the word techorim describes the disease. Right? So one of them is the place where it is, and the other one is the disease itself. So, and this is kind of what the Masudas Sion says over here in Pasuk Vav, it says, Bafolim kach shem amaka. This was the name of the actual disease that occurred to them, jumping a line. B'makam mechusa. It was in a place which is generally covered. Nikru afulim. This place on the body is called afulim. Meloshin ofel, which is a lashon of afela, darkness. Okay, but you don't have to get to more detail than that. So if we look now into Rashi, so you're going to say, okay, so pretty devastating, pretty painful, you know. Hemorrhoids, not very comfortable. Rashi makes it a little bit more...
But it gets worse.
Yeah, Rashi explains
the detail.
Yes. So shall we. The Rashi says that what exactly is this? Chocholes kerkasha, makas hanekev, that there was this plague which occurred on the person. And what happened when they wished to relieve themselves? So, akvarim nichnasim benigvehem. I'm going to translate it. The mice would enter into that place. Vishomtim bnei mehem v'yotzin. And they would go into their bodies. And as it's translated in the English over here, they would pull out their bowels. And what's the symbolism of this unusual makkah? Well, there's a couple answers. First of all, unfortunately, we don't have this in front of you, but Rashi said before in the previous parak that when they were speaking, the Plishtim were about what happened in Mitzrayim, so maybe they were looking at what happened to the Mitzrayim, they said, oh, we better be careful too. But Rashi said that that's not how all they interpreted it. This is what Rashi says in the previous parak. Rishoyim Omru, they said, Elohim hu Elohim hamakim es Mitzrayim b'chol maka. This God afflicted the Egyptians with every single plague. Kol mako shahoyulo. Everything that he had in his tank, he gave to those Egyptians. Al Mitzrayim haboyim. Ein lo od maka mi'ata. But there is nothing left that he has. There's nothing unusual.
No ammunition.
No, right. There's nothing new that he can possibly do to us. And he definitely found something new. So the question is, so he could have created any unbelievably bizarre makkah. So why this one in particular? So there's a famous Gemara in Gittin. The Gemara in Gittin talks about Titus HaRasha. The Titus HaRasha entered into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and there he performed an immoral act. And ultimately, so we know the story, he was in the water, Hashem was going to kill him there. And he said, well, you can only kill people in the water, you kill the Mitzrayim in the water, the Yamsuf, the Mabuls in the water. So he brought the little gnat. And what's this reason? The Gemara says this. There's no one more than the Gemara. The Gemara says that, why did Hashem bring this gnat? Because you went into a place that you shouldn't have. You entered into an area which is forbidden to you, something in which you had no business being in, namely the Kodesh Kedoshim. Mida Kenegan Mida, I have this yitush, this little bug fly into your brain, a place which it has no business being in. And therefore, similarly, if I may, in the English, it says on the bottom right, it says, because they gazed at the tablets, this is a quote from Rabbi Yeshaya of Trani, he says that because they gazed at the luchot, which symbolized the mysteries of the Creator, they were now punished in the way that struck at the hidden part of their bodies. So it's very similar to to the punishment of Titus Harash. All right. So that's that was the punishment that occurred to these people.
Sorry about that. It's a kochran kisavu.
That's not in the chukosim. Which is a question. Why? What's the difference between Tochacha 1 and Tochacha 2. There is a difference. Exactly the lush and how it's said and its length. But this was a punishment that afflicted the Plishtim, which is an interesting question, I guess you can say, is that the Rashi that I read said, you have nothing new. You have nothing new. So this is new. Maybe it's not new. It's in the Torah. So the question is, the Tochacha is something which is a threat. Lav dafka could happen. So there could be many things that Hashem could tell us or klolos, but not all of them will He actually do. And this one He did. Okay. So let's move on to the next pasuk. Pasuk Zayin. The next. So this is the affliction that they had. V'yiru anshei Ashdod kikein. So the people from Ashdod saw what was going on. They saw this. V'yomru, they said, L'yeshiv Aron Elokei Yisrael Imanu. We do not want, has to have something to do with this Aron. Kikasha yado aleinu v'al dagon Eloheinu. Because it is very harsh upon us, as well as on Dagon. So what's interesting, this is the connection. What does the second half of this paragraph have to do with what we're reading about this? The idol breaking is because they never got the hint. It fell down and they didn't get the hint. Then it broke and they still didn't get the hint. They start worshiping the threshold. Then Hashem says, I have to afflict your bodies. And therefore, this is how some of the Farshim explain when Parshas Tazria, the Parshios of Tazria and Metzora, that we have different Parshios discussing the punishment, let's say, for Lashon Hara. So what are the different things? A person gets saras on their body. You can get saras on your walls of your house. You can get saras on your clothes. So the famous chazal is that what exactly happens? It happens in sequence. First Hashem will afflict your house. And hopefully you'll see your house and you'll realize, I got to do tshuva, I did something wrong. If not, then He's going to bring a little closer to you on your begadim. If nonetheless you're still not doing tshuva, you don't see it, then He's going to afflict your skin. He's going to afflict yourself. And that's the same thing as we're going to be reading about this week, in Tazri and Metzora next week, is over here. That Hashem gives them the sign. It fell down. They still didn't get the hint. So it makes it a little bit harsher. Breaks the thing. Still doesn't get the hint. Okay? Now we're going to afflict yourself. And now they realize that it's the Aron, Hashem, and that it's Ve'al Dagon Elu Heinu, that they that this Aaron or God has afflicted, has destroyed our God. And therefore, what do they decide to do? They don't decide to break it, because of course that would probably incite God even more, the God of this ark. So get rid of it. But before they get rid of it, they decide to gather them together. V'yishlachu v'yasfu es kol tsarni plishtim aleihem. So they gather together and they summon all the powerful Plishtim, all the governors, v'yomru, and they ask the question, Ma nase l'aron Elokei Yisrael? What on earth are we supposed to do? What are we supposed to do with this aron? V'yomru, and they responded, I have a great idea. It's killing everyone, it's hurting everyone, rather, in Ashdod. Gas yitzov aron Elokei Yisrael. V'yatzevu es aron Elokei Yisrael. We have a great idea. Let's take the Aron and let's no longer keep it in Ashdod. Let's move it to a different city by name of Gass. And if we look on our maps, we can see that that's exactly how the map draws it out. that the Aron was in Ashdod, and it moved eastward to the city of
Gath,
right? Okay. So, obviously, when it goes, the Aron gets to Gath, everyone is all smiley, everything is perfect. The Aron doesn't hurt anyone, and they're able to do their Avodah Zarah. Probably not. So let's see the next pasuk. It's interesting that this was their thought process. What was their thought process? Get rid of it and put it in a different city, another city which is occupied by the Philistines, by the Plishtim. Why would that make it any better? That's a question which we'll see. We'll talk about at the very end of the parak. Let's see the next pasuk first. Vayhi afrei hitzavo oso. So after they moved it, they transferred it. Vatihi yad Hashem be'ir mahuma gedola ma'od. So Hashem struck this city as well with a very powerful blow. Vayachas ansheir mikaton v'ad gadol. Interesting difference. The first time Hashem causes this disease, but it doesn't say mikaton v'ad gadol. It doesn't happen to all the people, even the little children, the infants, the toddlers. Here, this is what happens. V'yisasru lahem techorin. And they were afflicted with the same disease of hemorrhoids. V'yishalchu es aron elokim ekron. So they said...
Anybody gets hemorrhoids has a problem, really.
Well, that's... you may have the aron in your community. V'yishalchu es aron elokim ekron. So the people in Gath here, they don't even ask. They don't even summon. Why do they need to summon? The brilliant governors of the Philistines said that if you have a problem, then just get rid of it and pass it along, right? Which is the whole attitude. If it's not hurting me, I can care less if you're hurting. As long as I'm not hurting, then I'm fine. And therefore, they brought it to Ekron, which is on our map, which is a little bit north of Gath. Vayehi kivo Aron Elokim Ekron. So when it was brought to Ekron, Vizaku Hekronim. All those Ekronim residents started crying and screaming way more to say, Hitzabo Elias Aron Eloke Yisrael Lhamiseni V'es Ami. That what is happening, this Aron is causing myself to die as well as the nation, all the people in the city. We're dying over here. So the question is, okay, it's uncomfortable. It's hemorrhoids, but it's not lahamiseni. We're not dying. Next puzzle. Vayishlchu, so they sent it away. The Yasvu as Kol Tzarni Plishtim, and they gathered once again all these brilliant governors of the Philistines. Vayomru shalchu es aron elokei Yisrael, send it away. Vayoshalim komo, and return it back to its proper place to the Bnei Yisrael. Vayomis osim yas ami, so that we should not die. Ki hoisa mohumas maves b'chol ir kavdam od yad holkim sham. That Hashem's hand is very strong, and it is conquering and killing all of us.
Mohumas maves. Mohumas maves is killing.
Mohumas maves
is a death.
It's like painful as death. I wish I was dead. It's worse than death.
What does it say in English?
Mohumas maves.
Panic of death.
Panic of death is what...
And he described this. But there was a panic of death in the whole city. Because they were afraid they were going to die. That's what it means. They didn't die. They were afraid.
Okay.
They probably had... Probably death was...
They felt...
felt death surrounding them.
Okay. But Hanoshim Asher Lo Mesu, and the people that did not die, right... So that could be one shot. This pasuk says, "Vanasha Masher Lo Mesu." Those that didn't, which means that some people died. Huku Bat Chorim, they were afflicted with this terrible disease. Vatal Shavasuir Hashemayim, and the outcry of the city ascended to the Shemayim, to the heavens. So the question again is
preparation H.
Apparently so. So the question is, what exactly is going on over here? What is the motivation? Why would they do such a thing, bringing it from one city to the next? One is they don't care about anyone else besides themselves. But it's also brought down the Mishpat of Zahav as follows. It says that they thought that Ashdod, in comparison to Gath, Ashdod was a much smaller city. And they felt that maybe Ashdod was not befitting to have the Aron, this holy ark, to put it in such a small thing. They put it into a bigger city, and then maybe that would be the reason that it would be spared. Now, it's also, if you look in the English on page 2, on page 39, you'll see that the Ralbag, which is the very last line before we would begin the sixth parak, the Ralbag points out that in Ekron, the plague intensified and people began to die, which is what the pasuk sounds like. The very last pasuk Yibed, Vanashma Sher Lo Mesu, that there were some people that didn't die, which means that people did die. So what's happened over here? So the Mishpitzo Zahav explains that it's the same idea of how things are progressing, because initially Hashem punished them by giving this affliction in Eshdod. But then it was only Rak HaGadolim, only the adults, those who had the ability to make proper decisions, those who were responsible and accountable for the actions, they're the ones that were afflicted. Then when it was brought to Gas, then it was Mikatan V'Agadol. Hashem gave a bigger punishment. And then when it went to Akron, not, this is how some explain it, that they actually, there was a Makas Mavis, that people were being killed, Shemeso Anshe'ir, people in that city were dying. So it's again the same idea that when it comes to, as we saw, we talked about by Tazrei Matzora, that Hashem will progressively continue. If you do not get the smaller hint, I'll give you a bigger hint, and a bigger hint, and a bigger hint, until finally you get it.
And the
Mesudas
David
said,
for a day, then you have Shechin and
right.
Makas
Bechoros, exactly. So this is how it works. Hashem's not going to. Hashem, that's the.
This David said there was a Megefa.
Well, this is a.
Ah. Megefa.
So people were dying.
People were dying from
right. But this talking about the Makos.
It's interesting. He says, "Vatal Shabbos Oyer Shemayim," that their voices came up to heaven.
Seems like at some level they were, did tshuva.
No,
it sounds like.
What not according to the Mefarshim.
Well, what do you think it means? They're crying to the Shemayim. Hakadosh Baruch Hu.
Mesudas David says, "Rahu midera guzma." The rots alone, me gedolam me oyd ad lamayla. They were screaming. They had the voices went up. That right. Didn't go up to heaven, but it was a loud thunder.
They were screaming. They were in pain.
He isn't
but in conclusion. This is, you brought up the Eser Makos. The famous kasha that's asked is, if Hashem could have brought Makos Bechoros, just bring Makos Bechoros. Why does he have to bring all these plagues? Just do one major plague and finished. And the answer is that's not how Hashem works. But Hashem doesn't do it that way. Hashem will give you the smallest hint, dam, big deal. But maybe that would have been enough for them to be makir that there's a Bari Olam, and that they would have allowed the Bnei Yisrael to leave. So once that didn't happen, Hashem did a little more, and a little more, and a little more, until finally you're still not getting the message, Makas Bechoros. And that's the same thing he did over here. That I gave you the opportunity to do tshuva, to bring the Aron back to the Bnei Yisrael, you didn't do it right away in Ashdod. And then I have to intensify the Maka by afflicting the children in Gath. And that wasn't enough, so therefore in Ekron already, I'm going to have a Megefa, that people are going to start dying. And then and only then, the last pasuk says that we should already send it back to the Bnei Israel because we no longer want the God of Israel to afflict us. Stop here.